Hello and welcome to Tantramar Report on CHMA 106.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Sackville, New Brunswick, the heart of the Maritimes, on the traditional and unceded lands of the Mi'kmaq people. I'm Erica Butler. It's Wednesday, November 10th. Coming up on today's show, for the past 2 months, 126 banners honoring Sackville's veterans have been hanging from light poles throughout the town. The commemorative banners are the work of a local volunteer who for the past 7 years has been collecting stories and images from veterans' families to honor their loved ones. Later on in the show, we speak with that volunteer, Garth Zwicker, to hear the story behind the Remembrance Project. But first, your local news and information. The province announced 52 new cases of COVID-19 on Tuesday, with 27 of them in Zone 1. 23 of the Zone 1 cases are under investigation, and 4 cases are contacts of previously confirmed cases. For the first time this month, testing numbers were back up to over 1,000 tests. 1,300 tests were completed province-wide, with 433 completed in Zone 1. That number does not include rapid tests. Nova Scotia officials say they have identified community spread in the Amherst area, and an outbreak at a Pugwash long-term care home is growing, with 17 residents and 2 staff members now testing positive. The outbreak is connected to a multi-day faith-based gathering in Cumberland County in late October, which was attended by about 100 people. The Gospel Light Baptist Church in Amherst hosted such an event called Border Town Camp Meeting, but CHMA has yet to confirm if that is the event in question. We've also reached out to both New Brunswick and Nova Scotia public health officials to determine if some of the clusters originating from that October event are being found in this province. Rapid test kits are available in Port Elgin today from 10 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. or until supplies run out. The Horizon van will be parked at Centennial Park on Chemeguay Road. Kits are also available in Moncton each weekday from 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. at 380 McNaughton Avenue. A 33-year-old Amherst man has been charged with murder in relation to the fatal shooting that occurred in Amherst on Monday. Joseph Thomas Hartson was charged with shooting and killing Jerry Jordan Morrissey of Amherst. Amherst Police Chief Dwayne Pike said the incident is heartbreaking for all those involved. The Amherst Major Crime Unit continues to investigate the incident with assistance from the Nova Scotia RCMP Forensic Identification Services. At Monday's Sackville Town Council meeting, Mayor Michaud presented the award for Youth Citizen of the Year.
It's our pleasure to present the 2021 Youth Citizen of the Year Award to Quinn McCaskill. Congratulations.
For a grade 11 student, Quinn McCaskill has a long list of achievements. Here's Mayor Michaud talking about a few of them.
During the past year, despite the challenges and the changes that COVID-19 has brought, Quinn has remained an active and engaged citizen in her community and province. Quinn is passionate about taking action to address the climate crisis, and before COVID-19, she led multiple youth climate strikes in the town of Sackville. Youth calls for climate action at the municipal level led to the creation of a Mayor's Roundtable on Climate Change in 2019, which she is an active member of. She sat on the public forum panel in February 2020, and this September, she co-organized the first ever climate change awareness orientation session for council and presented to councillors at the session. This past winter, she participated in a 9-week National Climate Justice Youth Training Workshop and National Youth Training on Engaging Municipal Governments in Climate Action. Quinn has brought her knowledge to the roundtable and provides a strong youth perspective regarding the need for bold action and systemic change to address the climate crisis.
That was Mayor Sean Michaud speaking at Council on Monday about local high school student Quinn McCaskill, who has been named 2021 Youth Citizen of the Year. While Council honored Quinn McCaskill for her work on addressing the climate crisis, the town chose not to incorporate any recommendations on its 2022 budget coming from the Mayor's Roundtable on Climate Change. 3 representatives from the roundtable presented recommendations to Council on October 25th. The roundtable suggested the town formalize its commitment to electric or hybrid replacement vehicles in its fleet, and also that all town staff participate in a half-day training session on the climate crisis. The trio also asked the town to reprofile the spending for what it calls the gas tax fund, which is now dubbed the Canada Community Building Fund by the federal government. Councillor Sabine Dietz had also presented suggestions on the budget to make the document more climate responsive. She noted on Monday that none of those suggestions had been incorporated and had some criticism of the budget process, which she says did not include meaningful discussion of the town's priorities.
The budget is a really important piece of work, and it's one of our major jobs to do, to be fiscally responsible. And it sets the stage for implementing priorities. It's a little bit backwards this year because we actually have had not had any meaningful discussions about priorities. I have to say that I am frustrated with the budget process and the lack of priority setting overall, and really frustrated that we've not been able to have briefing sessions with departments before the budget was presented. Our very brief strategic session, public session, was not really like a priority setting exercise, as I expect us to do as a municipality. So as a result, we have a budget now that is basically business as usual, with some tidbits when I think about the climate lens, 300,000 for more road work, some funds for EV charger. So it's a little bit larger than expected. We've had the Mayor's Roundtable put in significant time and energy to review a part of the budget and provide recommendations, and the budget has not changed.
But Dietz ended her comments on a positive note, saying that she appreciated staff responses to suggestions made by her and the roundtable.
None of my suggestions were accepted, but I'm actually okay with this for a reason. After receiving the responses, I asked to meet with Mr. Burke and Mr. Beale to get some clarification. And I believe after the meeting that actually we can start that fundamental change that I'm talking about within the parameters of this budget. And I'll speak to for each of the motions just briefly on how we can do that. I'm actually really confident. I was really pleased coming out of the meeting. I'm quite confident that over the next year, we can advance the shift without changes in the budget document itself. We can do it by actually making decisions as we go. That means that requires a lot of discussion and likely some motions, and I'll commit to figuring that out with staff, but definitely a commitment from council at some point and direction from council on where to go. This will not be easy. It'll take time. It's going to be a process of a number of years, but I personally believe that staff and the town is actually more ready than I thought we were. So despite all of that, what I've said in terms of being frustrated and, no changes made, I will vote in favor of all of the budget motions that are in front of us. I understand that this document, that budgets are living documents after they are approved, and I am fine with that. I think I'm very happy working with staff towards implementing some sort of climate lens, at least moving forward on a fundamental change that we all need to make. Thank you.
That was Sabine Dietz speaking at council on Monday. Also on Monday, Sackville Town Council rejected a proposal for a feasibility study to look at options for a new concrete skate park in Sackville. Councillors Matt Estabrooks, Michael Tower, Bruce Finney, and Mayor Sean Michaud axed the proposal. The study would have cost $12,500 and was to be conducted by New Line Skate Parks. New Line was to consult community members and develop a rough idea of design features and cost for a permanent concrete skate park at the current Dufferin Street location. Recreation Director Matt Pride told Tantramar Report that the study, if approved, could have been completed by Christmas. The proposal originated in a community budget meeting request back in 2020, when resident Alex Thomas pitched improvements to the current skate park, focusing on more entry-level features for younger kids to develop their skills on skateboards, scooters, and bikes. Thomas told council at the time that a skateboard park offers accessible recreation regardless of income. The decision against the skate park study comes in the same year that Sackville Town Council approved $60,000 per year for at least 2 years to help subsidize certain sports through a fee rebate for youth. The fee rebate program also originated at the 2020 community budget meeting, when Sackville Minor Hockey and the Sackville Skating Club asked for additional subsidies to help offset rink fees at the Tantramar Civic Center. Councillor Matt Estabrooks was the first to speak against approving the study on Monday, saying it would be better to hold off until the town is prepared to follow through on the building of the project, which could be years out.
Spending $12,592.50, which I consider to be a lot of money, on something that's just going to give us a pictured rendering and not really even a set of plans is I feel it's a quite a bit. So if you do a little bit of research, it's going to be a very expensive venture, probably in the $400,000, $500,000 range, and we have a lot of expensive things on the books right now that I feel would take more priority. My suggestion would be to put it on the shelf for planning and 3 or 4 years out, tender the whole thing all at once.
Councillor Sabine Dietz voted in favor of the study, though said she did have reservations about going ahead with a large project at this time.
I think my emphasis here is on community consultation, because I'm really hesitant about this project as well for all the reasons that Councillor Esterbrook mentions. But I think it's fair to say that there is a requirement to actually check if we need it, who needs it, and what it would look like if we needed it. So I think there is a process that we should finish up right now. It doesn't mean we have to go forward, but at least we understand better the need in this community for a skate park. So I will support this motion.
Councillor Bruce Finney asked whether Recreation Director Matt Pride had consulted Amherst about their popular skate park, which was built about 10 years ago for about $450,000. Pride told council he had been in contact with the leads on the Moncton and Amherst parks to get their input. He also said that he didn't expect the full cost of the park construction to be covered by the municipality, but intended to seek out funding to help cover the costs. This is the second time in as many years that plans for an improved concrete skate park have been curtailed. Back in 2020, Pride had put in a capital funding request to set aside $150,000 per year for 3 years in order to put the town in a position to build a concrete park without borrowing. But senior town staff recommended against that plan and removed the skate park savings plan from the town's budget proposal. Last night's vote was 3-3 with councillors Andrew Black, Bill Evans, and Sabine Dietz in favor, and Esterbrooks, Finney, and Tower against. Both Ken Hicks and Allison Butcher were absent. The tie-breaking vote was cast by Mayor Sean Michaud.
I think council on either side makes some valid points, but ultimately it appears to me that we are at least 2 to 3 years away from even discussing this as a council in regards to this project. In that case, I think at this point in time, we should put a kind of long-term plan together on this and come up with a game plan as to when it will hit the capital projects and what the planning is up to that point. So I will vote against this motion.
That was Mayor Sean Michaud speaking at Monday's council meeting. If you walk or ride around downtown Sackville these days, you may have noticed a series of banners on light poles depicting area veterans. The banners go up every year for a couple of months in advance of Remembrance Day. While town staff are responsible for putting up and taking down the commemorative banners, the driving force behind them is a local volunteer, Garth Zwicker. For several years now, Zwicker has been collecting stories and images from the families of Sackville area veterans, and then, with help from local graphic designer Graham Michaud, transforming them into banners which adorn Sackville streets each fall. It's a labor of love for Zwicker, who says his reward is reading the stories sent in by families requesting a banner to commemorate a loved one. I visited Zwicker at his Middle Sackville home back in August. Zwicker says the project grew to be much bigger than he expected back when he started it 7 years ago.
The background of this is, my father was in a veterans home in St. John. We got quite involved in his care. We knew all the staff. We knew other veterans. The Legion was a huge contributor to the home. And so 1 year, we find out that they are doing these banners. And I look at this and I go, this is so cool. So I started to talk to them about it, and they said, well, come down and see our unveiling. And actually got to be part of the unveiling. They needed some help. And so when I was walking around, I said, this is way too cool. You know, why can't we have something like that in a, you know, St. John's got a population of 100,000. You know, they've got 32 of these banners, so we've got a population of 5,000. You know, can I get 10? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we know the rest of the story. Mm-hmm.
This past September, Zwicker unveiled 16 new banners to add to the collection and may have finally maxed out the project at 126 banners.
Don't tell the town, because it's supposed to be 125, so we snuck one in there.
So there's no shortage of stories, I guess, but we're running out of polls, are we?
We're running out of polls, and again, I don't fault the town for this at all. I can remember when they put up the first 16, and I got a phone call, and they said, "We're putting up your banners right now." And I jumped in the car, and I drove down, and by the time I got down there, they had like 10 of the 16 up. It only took them like an hour and a half. And, you know, second year, not that much harder, but now they're at 125. So now it's not a not a one-hour project. It's not even a one-day project. It's 2 or 3 days. You know, you have to respect that there are other things going on in the town at the time. I will give them full credit for getting them up almost immediately after I unveil them. And they're very respectful.
Zwicker says that the combined stories of Sackville's veterans give a glimpse into the history of the town itself. The majority of the veterans featured in Sackville's 126 banners are from the Second World War.
They went over in 1939 or 40 and came home in 1945 and resumed their life. They just went back to being a foundry worker, you know, whatever they were, a veterinarian. You know, there's tons of examples. So they had a whole life for 30, 40, 50 years after that period. So it's a small segment, but it sort of is significant to the town. My very first banner was of a young man, William Bellamy. He, of course, signed up, went over, and he wasn't there very long, and he was taken POW. While in the POW camp, he was injured, and he died from those injuries. So a very young man, 19, 20 years old, if I recall. And he's buried in a place called Holton Canadian War Cemetery in the Netherlands. So my wife and I were going over there to take a little tour, and I made this connection. So we reached out to the family, and we said, you know, we would love to place a flag or something. And they were very happy to let us do that. And turned out the war cemetery was like 30 minutes south of where we were staying. Drove down there and had a walk through, and it really kind of brings to life, you know, what happened there. And I guess the respect and the appreciation that places like the Netherlands have for the Canadians liberating them. As well, I have had an aunt who was a war bride from the Netherlands. My uncle was part of the liberation and found this lady and brought her home. So have those little bits of connections in there. My own dad was a Korean War veteran and never told us anything that happened. And, you know, I don't know, maybe as a kid you don't really have the courage to ask them, or you ask them and they brush it off and, you know, you don't do it anymore. But it wasn't until he was considerably older that he started to talk about it. And I started reading some books I found, watching some documentaries, and I went, holy cow. You know, he was really part of something large in that war. You know, you sort of, it's unfortunate I didn't get that information until, you know, the last 7-8 years of his life. But it's nice to pass on, I think. It's we need to remember. It's just a labor of love. It really, I've enjoyed doing it. I've enjoyed reading the stories. It's inspired me to do other reading or to look into things differently. What started out as, you know, sort of a, oh, this would be cool, to this is very wonderful. This is, it's rewarding to me, so I'm glad to have been a part of it.
Zwicker says the banners belong to families who have commissioned them and will be returned to the families once they're retired, though it's not clear when that will be.
The concept was, when I first looked into these banners, was that they would have a life of 3 to 5 years. So I told all the families at the end of 3 or 5 years, I will give you back your banner. It's your banner. It's not mine. And I made that commitment. And what we found out was, A, because the banners are only up for about 2 months, and B, the quality of the vinyl that they're printed on is so high that none of them, not one, has ever worn. Occasionally one or two come off the poles, you know, the little clasp break or whatever, and they come flying off the pole. And it's funny because I will get a call and somebody will say, you know, there's a banner laying on the ground, and I will call, contact Todd Cole. And by the time I contact Todd Cole, most of the time he'll say, it's okay, we've already got it and put it back up. And so it's any citizen in town would be driving by and notice this and make the call. And so the other thing I always said about the banners is they would come down if they were showing excessive wear and tear, which, you know, is not respectful to a veteran, or if they were, you know, vandalized in some way or damaged. And knock on wood, it's never happened. And I think that shows a lot of respect. You know, inevitably somebody somewhere is going to do some kind of vandalism to something. And no, these have never been touched. And again, knock on wood.
What kind of feedback have you gotten from the families whose relatives are represented on these banners?
Oh, boy. You know, the words I hear mostly are, you know, loving, miss you, respect you, proud of you. And so that is what I hear from the families in regards to their veterans. And but really, it's the families. They're the ones that have to put the story together and the information together, and they've got to find the pictures, and sometimes it's not the right picture and something has to be done. I call the stories almost my reward, that, you know, I get to read them and I get to see all the cool pictures. And having, A, been a military brat in my younger life, and B, having traveled to Europe a few times, I can understand the connection more and more.
I guess, as you said, you know, the more people see these up, the more calls you'll get saying, I have a relative, I'd like to honor them. What will happen now that we've sort of maxed out, what will happen now when you get those calls?
Good question. I really don't know, because when I went back to the families of the very first year and said, you know, it's been 5 years, would you like your banner back or would you like it to stay up? And every person, every single solitary person said, no, I want to leave it up. So again, here we are at this 125 limit. Maybe the town will dig down and say, okay, you know, we'll go another 15 and I'll do another project. Maybe some will start to show their wear and come down. But you almost need like a minimum number to keep the cost in check. Because to do one banner would be in the area of $300-$500, but to do 10, well, okay, now they're $200. So I'm a little fearful of that. I don't want to, you know, have the price be so unachievable, you know, that most people can't afford it. Maybe there's the option of, you know, I can't put it on a pole, but I can have one made and you can put it in your house. That's not unusual, is in the way that we have duplicates made for some people at their request so that a relative can have a banner in their house all year round. But other than that, I don't know where it goes from here. I know that at some point in time, it probably wouldn't hurt to pass the torch and have some new blood do it. Maybe 125 banners for veterans is suitable at this time, and maybe there could be another banner project of famous people in Sackville or something like that. Mm-hmm. That would certainly be interesting. Mm-hmm. So right now it's kind of up in the air. We'll see. It always it's always changing and evolving. And just go from there.
You've been hearing from Garth Zwicker, the organizing force behind Sackville's Veterans Memorial banners. The Sackville Legion has announced it will not be having its usual Remembrance Day ceremony this year due to ongoing COVID-19 restrictions. Instead, the Legion will host a ceremony similar to last year and is asking that anyone in the general public wishing to leave a wreath, cross, or poppy are asked to do so after that ceremony. On Thursday, the Color Party will march from the Legion to the Cenotaph at 10:50 a.m. All wreaths and crosses will be placed at the Cenotaph by Legion executive members ahead of time. There will be a drummer and a trumpeter present. The Legion says patrons are welcome to visit the Legion following the service. Proof of vaccination and government ID are required to enter the Legion. That's it for today's Tantramar Report for Wednesday, November 10th. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.